wake on up. Wake up. With a nice cup of Joe.
What's up, Joe, bro?
Featuring Joe Spadoni.
He's an Italian.
And Joe, the Butcher Boy Shasky.
I am slippery.
Oh!
The best part of waking up is morning roast in your cup.
It is the morning roast, man, on 95.7 The Game.
And that's the ballgame. So the Giants, in tonight's game, only come up with two hits. And in front of 38,142, the Pirates spoiled the party tonight.
Happy hump day, people. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day indeed. Welcome in. It's the Morning Roast on a Wednesday. Joe Shasky, I'm Mark Randy, in for Joe Spadoni here with you on the Morning Roast. And Shasky, good morning. I don't even know what to say anymore about these San Francisco Giants. Just when you think they reach the lowest possible low, they pull out another terrible performance. They get two hit by the Pirates. They lose 3-1. They waste a great Justin Verlander start. They make more terrible brain-dead mistakes. And now they've lost five consecutive games. They're 2-9 since the break. They're 2-11 in their last 13, and they're back to 500 at 54-54. Good morning, if we can call it that.
I've given a few eulogies in my day, and I feel like I've been giving a eulogy on the 2025 San Francisco Giants for about a week and a half now. And last night, I can't even be angry. Why can I be angry? How can I be angry when the manager is clearly not angry? When the manager refuses to address the elephant in the room, which is this team literally doesn't know the rules of the game. When Elia Ramos in the first inning started scampering off second base.
First and second, one out.
And was halfway to third. And doesn't know the infield fly rule, which, look, I will admit, I don't think a lot of the casual fans nor the media, if I ask them to sit down without using Google, I don't know if they could accurately describe the nuances of the infield fly. That's a separate issue. But as a player, you need to know the rules. And if you don't know the rules, as they've told you since you were 5 years old in T-ball, if you don't know and the ball's up in the air, go back to the base. And Elliot Ramos not knowing the infield fly rule and then putting both hands up as we go to commercial, like I don't even know what I just did right there. And then going back out defensively in the very next inning and almost plowing Jung-Hoo Lee in center, who's finally calling for the ball and calling off the defender around him. Finally demonstrative. He was the most demonstrative I've ever seen. I've been waiting for Jung-Hoo Lee to do that.
Which is what we wanted, yeah.
For 2 years. Like, it feels like, even though he only played like a month and a half last year. So Jung-Hoo Lee did everything right, and Ramos almost hit him like he was a wide receiver coming across the middle.
And honestly, I was expecting it to happen. Because that's where we are with the Giants right now. I mean, I don't know what was running through your mind when that fly ball, the lazy fly ball, was hit to left center field, and I saw them converging, and Ramos was not letting up. I was thinking, oh, my God, he's going to truck Jung-Hoo Lee. This ball's going to roll to the wall, and it might be an inside the Parker. That's where my mind went.
I kept thinking, you might have to throw a flag for a defenseless receiver hit. That's what I was thinking. That's what I was legitimately thinking. I'm so flabbergasted by the lack of fire and energy from this team. You can lose, right? There's no doubt you can lose. You can't lose and be lifeless. You can't lose and be lifeless and have a payroll north of $180 million. Mm-hmm. Yep. You can't lose and be lifeless and have a payroll north of $180 million and not discipline or hold players accountable who have yet to establish themselves as credible veteran big leaguers. Ramos is one of their better players offensively.
All season long, he's been their best offensive player.
He leads the team in hits. He is usually at the top five in doubles, in on-base percentage, slugging, home runs. Like, pick the metric. He has been a very effective Giant at the plate. He has been one of the wildest adventures running the bases and defensively that I can remember. Let's think about this. The Toronto series. I can't think about the Toronto series without thinking about the awful gaffes he made defensively.
Multiple, yeah.
Which cost multiple pitchers. How about the throws that he's made over the last couple of weeks?
In Atlanta, bloop single to left field. And you've got Adames who goes out to be, I mean, you didn't really need a cutoff, man, because it was a bloop and the play was over.
Flipped it to him.
At that point, first, there was a runner on first, bloop single, now first and second. Ramos off a bounce catches the bloop, and Adames is, I don't know, 20, 25 feet away from him, and he throws it to him, and it goes 10 feet over Adames' head, rolls back to the infield. The runner on second gets to take third. Now, ultimately, I forgot who was pitching in that moment, buckled down and got the next out, and it didn't cost the Giants any runs. But there's like a mistake, mental mistake, terrible physical mistake that you can't explain, like every single game for this guy. Literally every single game. It is hard to fathom how a player of his stature, I know he's young, we're talking about an all-star last year, we're talking about the team's best hitter this year, if you look at the course of the entire season, and he consistently, in every other aspect of baseball, looks like a little leaguer or worse.
Give me a cross.
It's unfathomable.
But like, I'm going to give you a cross sport like kind of analogy here. When you're Manny Ramirez and you're hitting, I don't know, a career 555 home runs, and you bat, you know, with a 996 OPS throughout your career. That's your career.
One of the best hitters of your era.
You can do all the wild Manny stuff that we've seen him. You know, ridiculous plays in the outfield where he's cutting off balls from center field. You know, high-fiving fans, catching a ball to the fence. Like, you can get away with being Manny Ramirez when you're producing like Manny Ramirez. When you're producing the way Ramos is on this team, which is not the 27 Yankees, you more closely resemble like Corey Maggette, who Corey I thought was Maggette. A guy who should have stayed in school longer, who didn't know the rules of basketball, literally didn't know how to pivot. Like, and I think one of my big issues in any sport, and Belichick has said this ad nauseum, it's not about being a smart player. That's not it. Smart does not win more games than stupid loses.
Absolutely.
And Belichick said, don't be stupid. Stupid loses more games than smart wins. And when I watch this team, how many times can you say, well, that was stupid?
Oh, it's once every two innings.
I'm not here to say that I'm a guy with big league credibility or pedigree or any of those things. I have been on a diamond my entire life. 10U, 12U, 14U, T-ball, high school. You are constantly working on the fundamentals of the game. There's a saying amongst coaches, you can't do enough situational practice. We call it situations.
Yeah.
For the runner, for the fielders, for the batters, what is the situation? So you're at second base. Most people may not know the intricacies of the infield fly rule. It's first and second. Okay.
Or bases loaded.
I'm saying like you're Ramos. It's first and second. Yeah, yeah. Okay. There's one out. All right. What do you got to be thinking in your head? Okay. This is just like the checklist of a base runner. I'm in scoring position. Don't do too much. Matt Chapman's at the plate here. Don't want to get picked off on the inside move, right? Which is the big spaghetti move from a pitcher. If the ball's in the air in the infield, I'm going back to the bag. If the ball is hit to the right side of the outfield, to the right field, I'm probably going to tag up. At minimum, I'm going to take three or four hard steps and force a throw to see where it goes. If the ball's hit the left field, I might take a couple steps off. I might tag. It depends who the personnel is. With Tommy Pham, when I look out there and I see Tommy Pham, well, he's got no arm, right? So I might tag up on a ball hit to left field, depending on the depth of where it's at.
And first and second, if it's on the ground anywhere, I'm going, no matter what.
Exactly. Pass ball, I'm getting my good secondary lead after the ball is released from the pitcher. And if I read ball in the dirt, I might go. I might, depending on who the catcher is.
Just give myself a chance to go.
This is the situational checklist. Okay? And I know through years of practice and years of being on a diamond that if it's first and second, meaning there are two forces in front of the batter or bases loaded, okay, any ball hit up in the air that is under the infield fly designation, meaning it doesn't have to be in the infield. It can be in the short outfield grass Monday night, for example, was a play where the shortstop for the Pirates with runners on first and second, I believe Ramos was the runner, by the way, at second base. The shortstop goes out, and you can't call it right away as an umpire, okay? You have to wait until that guy positions himself, and it's usually a loosely termed thing. In Major League Baseball, they have very specific language. In pony leagues, in high school leagues, it's written a little different. But it's basically, in layman's, a routine pop-up that can be caught by an infielder.
Yep.
And again, it doesn't have to be in the infield. It can be in the short outfield grass. So on Monday night, the shortstop was trailing after the ball. The umpire sticks his finger in the air. And that is when you know you have an infield fly play in play. And as a base runner, you're already retreating back to the bag on an infield fly in less than two outs anyway. The batter is deemed automatically out.
It's as if the ball was caught.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now, once the ball is caught or drops on the ground, you as the runner can advance at your own will if you're at first, second, or in a bases-loaded situation at third.
Yep.
But in that scenario, it's a tag play, not a force play, and you can advance if you want, but you're going to get thrown out. Why is the rule in place? Well, it's to protect the two runners because it would be an easy double play if everyone saw a pop-up, they'd let it drop, and then both those runners would be kind of caught in no man's land behind the batter.
Throw to third and then quickly throw to second, double play.
Exactly.
And the reason why it doesn't exist in just a runner on first situation is because it's on the batter
exactly.
to run it out anyway.
And to hustle.
So the worst case
exactly.
with a runner on first and one out, the worst case for the offense is you just get the lead out at second base on a pop-up. Now, there are moments
exactly.
where the batter is so pissed off that they just pop the ball up that they start walking to the dugout. And an infielder who sees that, you can let a ball drop, you can throw to second, get the force out, the batter at first not paying attention, throw back to first, double play. But it's on the batter to just run it out,
yep.
and the worst case is you're just swapping base runners at first base.
I've played in leagues with guys who are so savvy in the infield on like these soft liners. My buddy Jonathan Vukuhari, who's probably listening to me right now, great ball player. He'll drop the ball just on purpose to try to get a double play, hoping that that guy who hit that ball is yep. so disgusted with themselves, they take two steps out of the box and start walking back to the dugout.
Yep. And it happens.
And it does happen. And so the point being,
but that situation does not need protection because it's just on the batter to do the right baseball thing and get to first base.
I'm convinced after listening to the entire postgame presser from Bob Melvin and from Elliot Ramos, he doesn't know the rule. He doesn't know the rule. He doesn't know the rule at all.
We'll hear from Ramos coming up in a little bit.
I'm convinced he does not know what the rule is. He doesn't know what he's doing. And again, this we can talk about coaching and them working on these things. He should already know that rule. And so to me, it's like, all right, what are we teaching in the minor league level? What did he learn growing up? Clearly, he didn't understand the rule. Like, you need to know the rules. I'm telling you, 12-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 10-year-olds, up and down the peninsula, North Bay, East Bay, doesn't matter where, they all are practicing base running situations and know in that situation what not to do, which is what Ramos did. And if you did that in high school ball, you'd get benched. You do it in college, you're getting benched. You do it in, I thought, the pros, you would get benched. You know what he did? He went out and played left field. So, Bob, you've told me you've given up and you're done. You're done holding people accountable. You're done with trying to, you know, win games and put the players out there who aren't going to make horrific gaffes. Why should Joe Shasky, the fan, and why should these San Francisco Giants fans that are paying good money to go to a game on a Tuesday night?
Yeah, a lot of fans there again last night.
Why should we care if you're not going to care? Why should we care if you're not going to hold him accountable? And then Ramos, with a total cop-out after, oh, I'm trying to do too much. No, you're not thinking at all, and you don't know the rule. Wear it. Just wear it. Hey, I didn't know the rule. I screwed up. I need to learn it. That's on me. Like, this is a larger microcosm for everything that has ailed the Giants for about two decades. For about a decade.
Shout out to those watching on YouTube. Brought to you by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. We're coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. Laughing Monk, righteously brewed in San Francisco. You want to hear from Ramos?
Real quick. Mark, the equivalent would be a lane violation in basketball. 5 second inbound in basketball, not knowing that you have 5 seconds, or being able to run the baseline, for example, in certain situations, which we've seen the Warriors have horrible gaffes on time and time again.
Here and there, but not every single game.
Exactly. Like, but these are, I'm trying to, like,
yeah.
these are equivalent rule things. When you see a gunner crush a punt returner who clearly waves the, you know, a fair catch.
It would be like a defensive end or a wide receiver lining up offsides.
I mean,
which happens every once in a while. Nick Bosa does it every so often.
He does. He does. And so, but what do you say when those things happen? What are you doing? What?
This is just simple. Get your head in the game. Think for a second. And you're a professional.
If it was one play, hey, you know what?
It happens.
Exactly. It's time and time.
This is a pattern
and
now.
Time again. And so, like, I'm not even irate anymore. I'm just like, oh, so Bob don't care? Why should I care?
Ramos' explanation for his infield fly rule blunder. Here's Ramos postgame.
Just from your edge point.
Just a mental error. Just trying to do too much, overthinking it. I messed up. There's nothing I can say about it. It's been happening a lot, so I'm just trying to get better. I'm just trying to do it better every day, every time. Just trying to work on it, even on my defense. I know it hasn't been the best, but I don't want to mess it up. I don't know what to do. I mean, all I'm doing is working every day, trying to fix everything, you know?
Cool. Go ahead, stop right there. So there's a scrum of people. I watched the whole thing. So, guys, Journalism 101, I'm telling everyone, ask him, do you know the rule? If this were the NFL, would we have not asked that question?
Probably would have. Yeah.
Do you know the rule? What is the rule? I don't think he knows it. And I'm not coming down his road and blast him. It's on him to know it as a major league player. That's number one. It's your job. It's your job. My job is talking on the radio and talking on YouTube and whatever. I need to know the algorithms. I need to know, hey, if we don't hit the brakes, these are the punishments. This is why it's important for us to hit the brakes. I need to do my live reads at certain times. I need to be able to have content. Like, there are certain work-specific guidelines I need to know. Pick any profession. Firefighter, electrician, plumber, lawyer. You guys all know there are standards. He doesn't know. And this thing, like, I was trying to do too much. No, you literally didn't know what you were doing. That's what it looked like. You were going in no man's land, then threw your hands up like, what was I supposed to do? Like, I don't know, go back to the base?
Well, and he says, you know, all I'm doing is coming in and working to get better every day. Like, I'm sure you are. Like, I'm sure you're not doing your work and the necessary pregame stuff. This isn't about that.
No.
This isn't about, no. Like, this... This isn't as simple as it's just about reps. It's not like it's Devers learning first base. Like, that's just a reps thing.
Yes.
This is just understand a very simple baseball principle.
Do you know the game?
That's all this is. And this, you're right, this is a little more of an obscure rule, but not for a major league baseball player. I mean, but we're talking about a kind of similar mistake in the Mets series where he's at second, no force out, runner just on second, he's the runner on second, a swinging bunt down the third base line, the third baseman fields it with his foot on the third base bag, has no chance to throw out Adames at first, and Ramos is thinking, I'm going to run to third, when the third baseman has the ball and is waiting for me there, and he gets tagged out. Like, we're talking about just these absolute, inexcusable mental blunders, and they're happening every single night. This is not, like, get your reps in. This is just, do you understand basic baseball principles?
Yes.
And
yes.
Now he's in his own head, and it's spiraling, because the answer is clearly no, he does not understand these principles.
No, and on a team where getting runners in scoring position is a difficulty. Like, we could laugh about how basically putrid they are once the guys do get to scoring position. But they had two base hits last night. Two. So clearly getting runners on base was an important part of last night's game, meaning they couldn't do it. It was rare. And then once you get on base, you're going to give up runs and outs willingly because of not knowing situations. It's not inexcusable. It goes against every fiber of my baseball existence. And I know, deep down inside, if I feel this way, imagine what Buster Posey feels.
Oh, my. He's fuming. He is fuming watching this baseball team. Absolutely.
I just, again, if you want to say, well, he is one of our best hitters. Hey, look.
He is.
He is.
But at a certain point, you got to do something about it.
Again, that's like me saying, like, hey, Corey Maggette was one of your top scorers on the Warriors back then. Like, you're laughing at it, but that's right.
I mean, he was. Those teams were so bad. Well,
so is this Giants team. So is this Giants team.
Worst team in baseball since Devers was acquired.
I mean, that's like saying, hey, you know, the Chip Kelly 49ers. Sean Drones was the leading rusher. It's like, yeah, it's the Chip Kelly 49ers. Well, right now, the Bob Melvin Giants are nasty. Like, it's nasty.
It is.
It's nasty.
It is. Coming up here on 95.7 The Game, we've got David Sampson at 6:50. David Sampson, former president of the Miami Marlins. Good to get his thoughts on what a front office goes through ahead of a trade deadline. Also, what the Giants are going through. Does this impact your plans at a trade deadline? We'll talk to him about that at 6:50. Then Dave Fleming, voice of the Giants. You're not going to want to miss that. He always tells it like it is. That's coming up at 8:30. All guests appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands? River Islands in Lathrop. That's what's coming up on The Game, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. It's the Morning Roast. Shasky and Grandy with you. We'll hear more from Ramos. We'll hear more from Bob Melvin. All that coming up next here on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, then he jogs out there and on defense the very next half inning. And I swear to you, I thought he was going to crush Jung-Hoo Lee.
Oh, yeah. I thought Jung-Hoo Lee was going to get hurt.
That's unbelievable. I don't know, man. And look, I understand there's this tolerance of like young player mistakes, right? We've talked a lot about Jonathan Kuminga or let's say Brock Purdy or, you know, pick the young player, Ricky Pearsall, like pick the young player in any sport. And we talk about kind of like the learning curve. I am tolerant. Trust me, I am. But when you are making literally a mistake or two every single game, for weeks on end, it may not be a physical error. That might as well have been one. I mean, that might as well have been one. And this guy's done it over and over and over and over again. And no one is saying he's the worst player in the world. He is a solid player offensively. These other things are outweighing his positive contributions.
The fact that he is staying in the lineup, and you can disagree with Bob Melvin's decision on that, and we can get into that, but the fact that he's staying in the lineup is only credit to his bat. Like, his bat has to be pretty darn good for him to stay in the lineup through this. If you were an average hitter, and he is an above-average hitter, if you were an average hitter, you don't see the field. When this is what the other two-thirds of your game is. When you are the least smart base runner in the game of baseball, and you are a below average defender, and in fact, not just below average, one of the worst outfield defenders in the league, you know how good you have to be offensively to outweigh that? And you could argue, and you might be right, that he's not good enough offensively, but that's what the Giants have decided. You know how good you have to be in the Giants' mind, or how bad the rest of the team has to be on offense?
For you to keep
him in the lineup despite everything that's going wrong? He has to be, compared to everybody else in your lineup, Barry freaking Bonds.
He's not. He's a really good player. I mean, right now, offensively, he more mirrors like that one or two seasons from Pedro Feliz than he does Barry Bonds, right? And I'm not saying that flippantly or disrespectfully. Like, he has solid numbers. Like, he does. He has solid numbers. But if you're going to make these types of mistakes running the bases and defensively, you can't play for this team on this ballpark.
Nope.
You just can't. So I think something's got to give here. And the fact that they didn't reprimand him and they didn't put him on the bench, to me, tells me everything I need to know about accountability for this 2025 team and where the manager is. I got a sense from the manager that he waved the white flag last night.
Do you want to hear from the manager?
Sure.
Bob Melvin.
What word salad does Bob have to say?
Bob Melvin, post-game last night. Let's see. Here it is. Ramos simply lost track of the rule. Here he is talking about Ramos and the infield fly rule.
As far as Elliott goes, just lost track of the rule. You know, he saw him call the infield fly rule, just lost track what he needed to do.
Okay, the follow-up is, well, then where the hell was he going? Lost track of the rule? It was a pop-up in the infield, and you see the umpire go, bun, bang, as in point, and then does the, you know, the out sign because the batter's out. Like, where's he going?
Yeah, I'll translate.
If he was going to leave, why didn't he, like, if I buy that, he lost track of the rule. Ball drops to the ground. Well, then where's the hustle? Where's the sprint from second to third?
I will translate for you. The translation from Bob Melvin is, yeah, he doesn't know the rule, and once he saw the ball hit the ground and it did not get caught, he's like, oh, this is a forced situation. I need to go to third. And then he realized everybody had and how they were reacting, and he's like, oh, something's off here. I got to try to get back to second base, and then he gets tagged out, and then he walks off to the dugout, palms up, as if, what the hell just happened? He did not know the rule.
If we saw this in the Little League World Series, which is going to be coming up here on ESPN very shortly, would we not be like, how does that kid not know the rule? How does that 11-year-old not know the rule? I mean, look, it's so egregiously awful in terms of some of these mistakes. And I'm not saying that he is doing this, but I'm having people tweet at me nonstop. Should he be investigated for stuff? Like, that's how bad and egregious. No, I'm not saying that.
The text just came in on the Boxer and Gerson.
I'm not suggesting that. You should see, I posted a video on TikTok. The amount of people that are like, hey, with all these investigations going around, like what? And I'm saying to myself, think of what people are saying, how bad these mistakes are, if you're even suggesting that. And I'm not suggesting that. I literally don't think he knows the rules. And that now that goes to me, though, that is on the coaching staff.
Absolutely.
And to me, it is on the coaching staff to make their players aware of all of these situations. And in a situation like that, like last night, you needed to sit him down in between. He did not need to go out to play defense. Like, your season's cooked. I don't want to hear, like, oh, these two at-bats that are almost going to have after this, or three at-bats after this, it's going to really salvage the season. Miss me with that. If you really care about the player, you sit him down right then and there. You put your arm around him and you go, look, dude, here is exactly what an infield fly is. And where's Giants PR to coach him on this before he meets the media? Because he clearly, his answer was awful and he doesn't know the rule. Period. And it's all, to me, this is all caping. We're caping up for a guy who does not know the rule. We're doing too much.
More Bob Melvin, what to make of Ramos' communication and mental errors. Here's Bob.
Guy plays hard. He comes to play every day. You know, at times his defense hasn't been its best, and I think it kind of snowballs on you a little bit, and maybe you start overthinking some stuff, and, you know, it's just, there's some clarity. But he comes up and he fights every at-bat, and, you know, the other portions of the game right now, he's having a tough time with.
I don't care if he fights every at-bat. This is the most embarrassing thing that I have experienced as a Giants fan in a very long time, and this, the last decade, has not been a particularly successful franchise.
No.
Yet this is the bottom of the freaking barrel, because a homegrown all-star left fielder, the one that we have been praying for since a dude named Barry Bonds, does not know simple baseball rules. Are you joking? But he fights at every at-bat. I don't care about the at-bats.
Isn't that what you expect all of your professional athletes to do? Fight, play hard. Like, that's, we're commending hard. And here's what I would say to Bob. Oh, was he really trying hard? Because on the Rafael Devers double play that was just like rolled over to second base, watch Ramos run from first to second, not slide, not get in front of the throw, not hustle, not try to break it up. At all. And you tell me if that's a guy fighting hard. Do you guys know exactly which play I'm referencing?
Yes.
He was lollygagging. And look, I'm not expecting every guy to run every single play. But when you're making all these mistakes, okay, you better make up for it in the margins. Again, you want to be Manny Ramirez and do all the dumb stuff, you better hit like him. And you hit well, but not well enough for me to excuse effort issues and just basic baseball IQ. It's maddening.
I'm at a loss. Like, I don't, you know, the old adage in baseball, show up to the ballpark and you'll see something you've never seen before.
Yes.
Generally, that's reserved for like good, quirky, fun things.
Yeah.
You show up to a Giants game, you go down to third and King, and you're going to see something you've never seen before. It's just going to want to make you rip your hair out.
Well, there was something I saw yesterday at first base, and it's just, I feel bad for Tyler Rogers. I don't even know what happened on that play for him. It looked like Schmidt pump fake to second.
Yeah, he was trying to get the force to second, realized he couldn't.
And then fired to Tyler Rogers, who hustled to go cover first base, and he's looking for the throw to come from second base, not from the second baseman in the hole, and the ball hits the runner. I mean, actually, they kind of got lucky that the ball hits the runner.
Oh, they did.
And then who steps to the plate and drives in a run?
Joey Bart.
Ex-Giant Joey Bart.
He had two hits last night.
Of course he did.
He equaled the Giants hit total by himself.
Oh, of course he did.
How about that?
Of course he did.
Does that make you feel good?
I just... We're losing to the Tommy Pham, Joey Bart Pirates. The Tommy Pham, Joey Bart Giants.
Tommy Pham had three hits last night.
Pirates, excuse me.
He's hitting 273 on the year.
Hey, look, this is not a hot take.
He'd be the Giants' best hitter for average.
I'd rather have him than Yaz. When I see Tommy Pham in the lineup, I go, well, I can't take you serious.
God.
That's how other teams view the Giants when they see Mike Yastrzemski in the lineup.
Giants
I'm not taking you serious.
Giants lose 3-1. They've lost five games in a row, and now they're 500 for the first time since they were 1-1. We'll get back to the Giants. We do have David Sampson, former president of the Marlins, coming up in just a sec. But first, it's time for the Golden State Valkyrie Strongest Player of the Game, brought to you by El Camino Health. Our strength, your health. The Valkyries faced some stiff competition from the Atlanta Dream last night, but pulled out the last-second win thanks to Cecilia Zandelasini, who dropped a team-high 18 as well as the game winner with 3 seconds left.
Across the timeline, Tiffany Hayes, 10 seconds left, guarded by Caldwell, throws to Zandelasini, driving right alley on Gray, puts one up from the block, around it, down! With 3 seconds to go, Chechi delivers una vez más!
That's the great Kevin Dana on the call here on 95.7 The Game. Yeah, big shot. Gives the Valkyries a much-needed win. That was the strongest player in the game, brought to you by El Camino Health. Our strength, your health. All right, what's coming up on the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. Former president of the Marlins, David Sampson, joins us next. What is going through Buster Posey's mind right now? David Sampson might be the best guy to ask. We'll do that and a whole lot more with David Sampson when we return. That's what's coming up on the game here on 95.7 The Game. It's the Morning Roast. Shasky and Grandy with you. Back with more next on 95.7 The Game.
First time ever walking across the Golden Gate Bridge was me running across it in America.
Wow.
How random is that?
Wow.
I was kicking her butt for like 21 miles, and then your boy got locked up. I was in giant basketball shorts and basketball shoes. Didn't train at all. And it was like the
tourist. You were in basketball shoes?
Oh, yeah. And big shorts. This was like 15, 16, 17 years ago. And by like the 21st, 22nd mile, I got all locked up and I started slowing down. It was straight tortoise in the hair. Here comes Michelle, you know, comes jogging by me, and she ended up beating me. And to this day, she still holds it against me.
We've got David Sampson joining us here coming up in just a couple of minutes. We're brought to you by Golden State, serving the Bay Area for three generations. When you succeed, we succeed. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com. David Sampson, the former president of the Marlins. When it comes to a front office dealing with the trade deadline, when it comes to a front office having to include a team's recent play as a factor in what they should do with the trade deadline, no one better to ask than David Sampson. We'll do that coming up here in just a couple of minutes. So do you feel like benching Ramos, something like that, is the solution here? Just sitting him down, let him think about everything that's going on, let him calm down, let his mind stop going crazy?
I think you owe
is that something
the,
that helps him?
I think you owe it to the rest of the guys on the team to just like hold somebody accountable. Like, okay, look, hypothetically, in this scenario, how can you look everyone else in that dugout? Verlander is a good example,
yep,
who's gotten very little run support this year, and he finally pitched well. And I'm not here to say that Verlander overall is some victim of the season. He hasn't had his best season at all. But, like, you got to hold some of these guys accountable a little, and just a little. And he might be one of their better players, but these mistakes have been costing them momentum within the fabric of every single game. And so, yeah, something has to be done. He is not some established star. He is not a guy whose track record gives him so much leeway that he's allowed to misplay balls left and right in the outfield, that he's allowed to have multiple base running gaffes in multiple consecutive nights. Like that's inexcusable.
It is. Here's Bob Melvin postgame last night on if he would think about giving Ramos a day off.
He's one of our best hitters. It's tough to give him a day. It's tough to DH him, too, because we have a couple guys that do the DHing right now. He's got to power through it.
Well, you're not wrong there, Bob. It is hard to DH him because you have a bunch of guys who cannot really field very well, and a bunch of those guys are already playing the field. So we'll get back to that coming up. There's a lot more Bob Melvin sound to sort through. Elliot Ramos also said some other things that we want to make sure everybody hears. But joining us now on the River Islands guest line is David Sampson. All guests appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop? David Sampson, former president of the Marlins, host of the Nothing Personal podcast with Meadowlark Media. David, it's Mark Randy, Joe Shasky with you here on the Morning Roast. Thanks for taking some time out of your day. We appreciate it. How you doing on this Wednesday?
I am doing well. Good morning to you.
David, I want to get right into it because last night the Giants have just been free-falling. I know you've been talking about it. There's a whole Devers conversation. We'll get into that. But there's a guy on the team, Elliot Ramos, right now, and he's a solid player. On this team, he's one of their best, if not the best, offensive player. But he's made so many defensive mistakes and horrific base running mistakes. Like, I'm talking little league level. And last night, he didn't know that there was an infield fly called by the umpire. He just took off, going from second to third. Ball was dropped. He gets forced out, throws his hands up, and basically both the manager and everyone's like, hey, he didn't even know the rule. What do you do in these situations when you're a front office? What should be done on a guy who is a very young player and not a quote-unquote superstar? How do you handle this?
You'd be shocked how many players don't know the rules, don't know the outs, don't know the opponents who they're playing, don't know basically the travel schedule, don't really have any idea of the signs. Man, I love Luis Castillo. He was a World Series winning player for us. We had to give him the signs. Just we had to tell him, steal, stop, bunt. Like, literally, we just yelled at him, and if the other side knew what we were doing, it's whatever. He was that good that he could get through it. Here's the frustrating part, is that what you hope is that when players get to you, they've been developed. But the truth is that there's more developing happening at the major league level than ever before, because having young performing players has become so important in terms of your payroll and how you put a team together. But it comes at a sacrifice. It's not that the players are so much better today that they don't need the minor league development. It's that the patience by front offices, me included, has just waned in a way that you're willing to sacrifice certain things that you wouldn't have sacrificed before. But at some point, gentlemen, it becomes too much and you send the player back down.
David, how much of this is on coaching then? Because you laid out that maybe these players are coming to the big leagues with less, I don't know, general baseball knowledge than ever before. So these issues, and it's not just Elliot Ramos, by the way, he's just the poster child for them. There's been some mistakes in center by Jung-Hoo Lee. We also saw a weird play at second base, Casey Schmidt, last night as well. How much of this is on coaching, or is it just the reality of the young baseball player in 2025?
It's the reality of the young baseball player. What's funny is that it used to be the coaches in the big leagues that they really weren't there to teach the players how to play. And it's become more important that because there is so much coaching now at the big league level. So it's what we were talking about earlier, that when you hire a coaching staff, it is now more about instruction than ever before. And so you got to make sure you have the right coaches in place who can do it. But it's really hard to learn at the big league level because the stakes are so high. There's really no opportunity for anything other than on-the-job training because you play every day. It's not like you get a week of practice in between games like in the NFL where you can, you know, literally do classes and try to do more teaching. It's just harder in baseball. And so when you're putting your staff together, you have that in mind. But again, I long for the days when our coaching staff, it wasn't necessarily about teaching or developing. It was about making good players great. And I think that's how you win rings, is when you have incremental help making good players great.
So what is happening right now with Bob Melvin? He got his contract extended kind of out of nowhere. I know he was in the lame duck scenario, and now he's talking at the podium last night. Well, you know, we've had all these player meetings. We've had coaching meetings. And immediately my ears went up, and I go, oh, boy, I remember this with Gabe Kapler. We had a bunch of player meetings down the stretch, and it basically signaled that he's out of here. When you hear, hey, we've had player meetings, we've had manager meetings, we've had front office meetings with the players, what does that mean to you?
Straight panic, and that's what it is. You don't want to have too many players meetings. You want to do them only, you know, occasionally during the season and right before your best pitcher is going against the team's worst pitcher, because you want to get a win after every player meeting if possible. And when we do a front office meeting, it was because something acute was happening where we needed to deal with it that minute, and we couldn't deal with it individually, so we get the whole team together. But when you're doing back-to-back meetings and you continue to lose games, the whole purpose of trading for Devers was to get an early start on being a buyer. The benefit of that is that if it doesn't work, you can turn into a seller by the deadline. And I don't really understand how the Giants would do anything other than sell in the next 24 to 30 hours, because they're not in the race. They're not a playoff team, and you have to understand how to evaluate your team. If they want to be in bed with Devers and they're going to keep him and they're going to pay him the balance of his contract, which it appears that that's the choice they made, you just got to be smart about being realistic. But we'll see what the Giants do, but they're an interesting test case of having done something early and then fallen apart.
David Sampson, former president of the Marlins, with us here on the Morning Roast at 95.7 The Game, host of the Nothing Personal with David Sampson podcast on Meadowlark Media. How much does a team take into account their play leading up to the deadline? Because by all accounts, and Buster has come out and said this, players on the team have come out and said this, Bob Melvin has said as much, by all accounts, the Giants have been planning to buy all in the last couple of weeks leading up to the trade deadline, but now they've lost five in a row. They're 2-11 in their last 13 games. How much does the stretch of play right before the deadline really impact what a team does at the deadline?
It really depends on the pressure from your owner, and I don't want to blame owners, but sometimes you have to. So owners are the ones who drive the deadline. They're the ones who say, all right, we can take on X millions of dollars at the deadline, or they say, along with their president and CFO, we have to shed dollars, or we can stand pat financially. You can make whatever trades you want, but it can't impact the overall cash payroll for this season. And that comes from the top. In terms of whether or not you think your team is in it, you know, I read the great Ken Rosenthal in The Athletic this morning saying there's a team like the Rays, the Giants, still deciding whether they're buyers or sellers. That's not really how it goes inside the front office when you're inside the trade deadline room. You know exactly what you have to do and what you can do financially. And what you're deciding is whether or not it makes sense. And I don't mean C-E-N-T-S, I mean S-E-N-S-E. Does it make sense to do the trades that we were thinking of doing given the state of our team? But you don't change your view of your team based on a game or two games. You base it on your evaluation of the team at different points of the year. So when you get Devers and you think you're a buyer, going 2-11 doesn't change that fact. To me, it does. But to a front office, they would say, hey, we're behind this team. We're going for it this year. It's Buster's first year. It could be Melvin in the twilight of his career. We're going to add. If I'm an owner, I'm allowing the baseball people to do it, but I'm certainly being a little suspect if it comes to taking on money.
On the Devers thing, you've been, I would say, skeptical in terms of, you know, what it would do for the Giants. And I think you always saw the Giants' reasoning on why they acquired him, but you were really high on, hey, this is addition by subtraction for the Red Sox. They're 20-15 since the trade, and the Giants are 13-23 since the trade. And Devers has been, he's been okay. You know, I think we all ignored a lot of the red flags, and now we're starting to see some of them. His weight, his discipline at the plate in terms of just swinging out of his shoes and just his overall body. I think there are some serious concerns, you know, on a big contract that he's on. What's your make of how Giants fans should feel the first couple of months in on what might be a 9-8 year relationship?
I would just say that when there are trade discussions between two teams, and one of the teams says yes